Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a bowl of sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the ugly game that the Bears played today, this week in Blackhawks, and we'll be talking about some of the Bulls play that we've seen during the first couple games of the season. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is well underway, and if you want to see some of the best young players that the Blackhawks have to offer, definitely check out icehogs.com. Play at beautiful BMO Harris Bank Center in downtown Rockford, Illinois, less than 90 minutes from the city limits. Fun for the whole family. Affordable fun for the whole family. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh, Alex. I was hoping to be overjoyed today when we talked, but I'm not.
Yeah, I hear ya.
So I'm sure everybody that's listening to this wants to lament. And because they've watched the game, they felt everything we're feeling now, and everybody wants to lament with us and vent their anger, and we're right here along with you. Is I feel this show, we're gonna go a lot more meatball than usual. I know I am. Maybe Alex will keep it real, but I'm gonna go meatball.
Okay, I mean, you know, I think that's an important disclaimer to make. I mean, let's face it, if there is a team in this city that makes us go full meatball, it's the Bears.
I mean, all right, so preface this. Before the game, I mean, over the couple days before the game, I'm like, you know what? What do I really expect? Is the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick against a rookie head coach and essentially a rookie quarterback. This is not going to bode well. They're going to win. They'll probably, put the beat down on us. And then this morning, got up really early, and I'm thinking, you know what? I think the Bears can win this game. They're going to shock everybody and win this game. And then the game started. And I just got slapped back to reality so quickly.
Well, you know, this morning I was thinking kind of like you were, but I was thinking that for a while. You remember me saying that they'd beat the Patriots was something that I made before the season. It was my bold prediction. And coming into this game, I thought it is possible. I mean, the Patriots are beatable. You know, Tom Brady's Tom Brady, but, you know, at his advanced age and they hadn't won a game on the road yet, I thought it was a winnable game. They had their chances. They didn't take advantage of some of those chances. Some they did, some they didn't. And look, if you would have looked at the final score before the game started, most of us probably would have said with kind of a little sigh in our voice, yeah, that sounds about right, knowing the opponent you were given. Because I thought they could beat the Patriots, but I'm not saying they would. But the way it went down, when you give up 14 points via special teams, when your quarterback did not look good overall, when some of your top targets did not look good overall, and when you made some very questionable decisions. You know, the score doesn't tell nearly the whole story. And what's frustrating is that while the Patriots are the better team, this was a winnable ball game. And if the Bears really wanted to tell the world that they were for real and that they were contenders, they would have won this game. I understand that there is a lot of growing to do. I understand that this team looks better than it had. I mean, let's face it. If this was a Tressman era Bears team or even an early Fox team, heck, maybe any Fox team whatsoever, they'd probably lose this game 45-10. But if you really want to take a major step, you got to start winning these types of games. They've beaten a Seahawks team and a Cardinals team that are not good. They beat consider the Tampa Bay Bucks what you will. They're not great. They're not terrible. But you got to start winning these games if you want to truly prove that you are contenders right now. What this is telling me early on in the season is that this Bears team, while improving, while getting better, it's not there yet. Is that fair or not fair?
It's more than fair. It's absolutely more than fair. And you're right. The Bears had every opportunity to win this game. It started off with Gronkowski not even showing up on the trip, which is weird because Wednesday he was listed as questionable. And then he didn't even come on this trip, which is Bill Belichick totally manipulating the rules. But whatever. So you don't have to prepare for Rob Gronkowski. You are playing the most immobile quarterback in probably in the league. And, you're at home. And the New England Patriots were trying to gift you a win. Is with how many multiple turnovers did they have? So the Patriots were turning the ball over, which is something they don't do. And the Bears capitalized on offense, but they just couldn't make the plays when they needed to make the plays. And there's so much blame to go around for this that I don't even know where to start with it.
Well, I think it's one of those things where you got to tell yourself, this is a team game, this is a team effort, and at the end of the day, everybody didn't do enough. I mean, can you think of one player that really stood out? I think probably the best player of the game for the Bears was Trey Burton. I mean, who else really stands out today? Because
I would say Trey Burton, and then after that, Kyle Fuller, and then beyond that, nobody.
Yeah, right. I mean, Kyle Fuller had some nice plays, and then, there was the pass from Brady where he didn't turn his head, but no, I guess to be fair, that was a perfect throw by Brady. I mean, that's what he does. That's why he's considered the best ever. But yeah, because Trubisky had some goods and some really bads. Tariq Cohen, I thought overall he did some good things, but it wasn't as good as weeks before. Jordan Howard didn't get that many touches. He didn't excel. He didn't do bad. What I thought was really disappointing as well today, outside of the defense, which I know we'll get into, boy, there were some big drops today. And I know that Trubisky had a lot of very off throws, but a couple of those incompletions were completely on his targets and not on him. Allen Robinson, that one drop early on, that just kind of caught me by surprise. And, everyone's going to drop it every now and then, so I'm not like fuming mad at him, but it just goes to show that not a lot of people did what they were fully hoping to do today for the team.
I want to start with head coach Matt Nagy. His team was not ready to play today, number one. Number two is I don't think the game plan that he had to attack the New England Patriots defense was very good at all. New England was ready to take away the outside. And if you are Matt Nagy, and you're going up against Bill Belichick, arguably the best head coach ever, you know he's going to go look at the film, see what you do, and take it away. So you have to be prepared. If that's taken away, what's your plan B? And the plan B for most of the game was, like, say a prayer and let Mitch Trubisky take off running. They for the most part, shut down your wide receivers, and they took away the edge in the outside runs. You know, and it's you just had to be prepared for that, and he wasn't. There was more awkward game or clock management, and you know, just some of the play calls just didn't make any sense to me. And then the end of the first half is you're going to go out there and have that dog turd pass rather than attempt a makeable field goal.
It was what, 58 yards, right?
I mean, it's a long field goal, but that's a makeable field goal for an NFL kicker, especially an NFL kicker that's being paid like as one of the most highest paid kickers in the league.
See, in that situation, what I said was either go for the field goal or go for the end zone. If they would have gone for the end zone, I would have defended him for going for the end zone. If they would have kicked the field goal, I probably would have understood that too. But what they did made no sense. I agree with you on that. I don't get what was the purpose of that. What were they trying to do?
I don't know. And then also Matt Nagy is, if Khalil Mack isn't 100% or even anywhere close to 100%, which it doesn't seem like he is, then sit him down, let him heal, and play somebody else. I would rather have somebody else in there that's 100% than Khalil Mack at 50% or whatever he's at, because he wasn't effective.
And it was obvious. I mean, Tom Brady today, the most frustrating part of this game for me today was Tom Brady had all time and space to throw. He could have sat down and had a tea party with anybody for hours, and they wouldn't have touched him after a snap. He had all day to throw.
Part of it was how many missed holding calls that there were, but that's neither here nor there because it was going both ways. But Vic Fangio didn't have this defense ready to play for the second week in a row. I know he's not the one that's out there tackling, but Bill Belichick is a good head coach. And if he knows that Tom Brady is not a mobile quarterback, so you have to know that they're going to set you up with quick passes, screen passes, anything to get the defense running around and neutralize that pass rush. And that's exactly what they did, and the Bears were not ready. The Bears looked so surprised that that's what the Patriots were doing. And I'm just an old guy sitting on the couch, and I'm like, I knew that's what they were going to do. How do I know this? And Vic Fangio and this defense don't know that.
Well, if you just want to go on general coaching today, I think we saw why our coaching isn't at that level that we want it to be yet, because look what experienced and successful coaching that's won 5 Super Bowls is capable of doing.
Vic Fangio, if you're listening, which you're not, is the reason you never got a head coaching job is these last 2 weeks. Look how you prepared. That's what you did. And it's frustrating. These players didn't address the tackling issues. They were ill-prepared for what Bill Belichick was going to do. And it's frustrating. And, you know, I read a quote, and I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Bill Polian, maybe? And he said that Matt Nagy was a great hire a year too soon, but better a year too soon than not getting him. Meaning that you're going to go through some growing pains of him growing into the job. And I think that's what we're seeing with him. But Vic Fangio has been this position, multiple teams, for a long time. He should not be caught off guard with his pants down like that.
Yeah, it was disappointing, no doubt. Just so many guys wide open. Secondary wasn't even close to guarding these guys throughout most of the game. They made some good tackles. They missed some tackles. There was no consistency there. It was rough. It made a few nice stops. I'll give it that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it didn't do its job. And, you know, you could talk about the secondary all day, but like we said, if you don't get the pressure on Tom Brady, then forget it. And there was none of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Bears defense, you have to go into this game saying, what, look historically, what Bill Belichick does to young quarterbacks. He confuses them. He confuses them and forces them into uncomfortable positions and makes them make mistakes. You have to, historically, that's what he does. And you have to go into this game with a mindset of Mitch Trubisky is going to be confused by what fronts Bill Belichick is putting on him, and he's going to make mistakes. And as the Bears defense, you have to go into this game thinking, we have to limit Tom Brady in this offense because we are going to have to help out our offense. And they came in there and laid an egg. And you know what? I want to keep on the defense for now, but Mitch Trubisky had a rough day, but there was a lot of good things I saw. I'm not going to beat him up too bad, but we'll get to that in a minute. But this defense just, they had to go in this game with a mindset, and they didn't.
No, it didn't. I think one of the most disappointing things here was, in addition to not getting really the pressure on Tom Brady, because I can talk about that over and over and over, but what stinks is that it got the takeaways. I mean, one was a special team, but you got a pretty nice takeaway. And then as soon as they gave up the kick return for a touchdown to Cordell Patterson, it just seemed like everything was going back down again. It's like all the steam that they were gaining was just kind of sucked out.
Yeah, and as far as the defense, is Khalil Mack clearly wasn't 100%. He just didn't look right out there, and they had him dropping into coverage so much. That's not why you traded two first-round picks and paid the guy a lot of money, to drop into coverage like that. And on the other side is Leonard Floyd had the worst game he's had since becoming a Chicago Bear, hands down. He looked bad.
And that's another name where I just wonder, is he still really not right physically? Is that what's going on?
Or is it a combination
of he's not physically right and he's just not playing well? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Because he played well last week. He was one of the few. This week he just looked like garbage. The touchdown pass to White, he just looked so confused and got caught flat-footed. Flat-footed with no ability to turn his hips. For being such an athletic guy, you know, you've got to be able to be on your toes. And, you know, granted, White is an NFL player and he put a good move on, but Leonard Floyd just was so flat-footed, he had no chance. No, he didn't even give himself an opportunity, and it made it an easy pitch and catch.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I think that it's fair to say that overall he's been one of the most disappointing players on this team, but I've been willing to give him a pass for a while because of the injury. But I think it's really come a time where he's got to step up and he's going to show why he should be here and why he was worth the pick at the time.
And you know, back to Khalil Mack, you know, not being 100% is he normally he goes attack, 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 and he puts everybody on their heels. And because he wasn't, and he was playing gingerly, go back and watch how many times he got knocked on his butt because the offensive line, they were the ones that were attacking Khalil Mack. And he got knocked to the ground multiple times because he just wasn't playing his game. And it was frustrating to watch. And, you know, the first quarter is New England went right at Roquan Smith. That's who they attacked, Roquan Smith. So, you know, all these guys that are supposed to be the leaders on our defense are the ones that let us down.
Yeah, it's true. And again, the coaching was miles ahead. The Patriots coaching was miles ahead of ours.
And the tackling in the secondary was abysmal again. Again, after you watched that tape last week, how do you not just go, I don't care about putting a big hit on, I have to wrap up? And it was so many guys just putting shoulders into people and not getting the tackle. It's infuriating.
It reminds you of when they struggled tackling a few years ago, and you saw a lot of good tackling early on in the season, and then it's going back to that. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, and as frustrating as the defense was, the Bears still had an opportunity to win this game. And that, I mean, that's at least got to be some sort of encouragement, is that you got beat every single phase in the game. You got beat coaching. You got beat special teams. You got beat offense. You got beat defense. And this game went 1 foot from being an overtime game. That's got to make you feel good. You still feel like crap, but if there's any sort of silver lining to this, it's the fact that the New England Patriots with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick dominated you in every single phase of the game, and you still almost took this to overtime. You know, you 1 foot shy of going to overtime.
Well, I mean, to me, it kind of makes it a little more frustrating, but I see what you're saying. Now, I'm trying to find a good way to say this. I don't think these consolation games are doing much for me anymore. Like, you know, we almost tied with them. We almost beat them. I'm sick of the almosts. It's frustrating with the almosts. I want to see wins.
I'm right there with you. Yeah, I agree 100%. I want wins, and I'm so angry. I was just like, steam was probably shooting out of my ears while I was sitting on the couch watching this. I'm just saying is that we went into this season, most people expected us to have a losing record. And this team, I think, is ahead of schedule. But I think the fact that we are so frustrated means that we have actual expectations for this team.
That's fair.
If this would have been 38, if this was 38-31 under Mark Trestman or 38-31 under John Fox, I think we would have all been popping champagne. But because we are starting to have expectations of this team, we are not happy with that result. Losing 38-31 is not good enough. It's not good enough. And this was a measuring stick game, and we came up short.
Right. Again, I think it just goes to show that while there are improvements on this team, vast improvements, they're not there yet. They're not there yet. This team is not a contending team until they beat good teams and can maintain a lead in the division. They're not contenders until further notice. If down the stretch they start winning more games and they beat the Vikings and they beat the Lions and they beat Green Bay, then they're contenders. But until then, no, they're not contenders yet. And if you want my personal opinion, I think that this right now, looking at this team, is an 8-8 team. I'm not saying that the future is wrecked because, look, I still think this team has a very bright future, and I think that this team is going in the right direction. Don't get me wrong while I kind of vent here, but if you're looking at this year just overall, I see an 8-8 team. I don't see anything better.
I mean, you know, we may start to look differently because the next two games are against the Jets and the Bills. And if we do what we should do, the Bills are bad. And that they might be, you know, they're either going to be playing Derek Anderson, who threw for like 10 yards and 19 interceptions today, or Peterman, who is probably the worst quarterback I've ever seen in my life. And those are the guys that they'll be playing with as quarterback. So you've got to feel good that they're going to beat up on Buffalo. And the Jets are where the Bears were like 2 years ago. So I just feel like in a couple of weeks, we're going to still feel angry that we let that Green Bay game slip away, that Dolphins game happened the way it did, and the Patriots game happened the way it did. But we're going to be at least saying, hey, we're 5-3 right now. We're 5-3, and our likelihood of being above 500 is looking much better. That's, you know, you just got to take it week by week at this point.
I know, you're right. It's a good way to look at it. And again, the way I can look at this this season will change throughout the season. I'm just saying right now, if you ask me right now what I think is going to happen, I think that this is an 8-8 team. That could get better. It could get worse. It could stay the same. Things will change as it goes along. They have to beat these next two teams. They have to win both those games if they have any sort of chance at hanging around. Any sort of chance. You got to beat them. There's no question about it. If they lose terribly to those two teams, then just forget it.
I don't even think they have to lose terribly. I think if they lose either of those games, the Bears are in trouble. It's after that is you start jumping right into the thick of your division opponents. And those are the games you have to win. I mean, you know, it's the NFL. You got to win against everybody. But the most crucial ones are the teams in your division. And after those, you got the Jets and the Bills. Then after that, it's Lions, Vikings, Lions. And that is where you are going to win or lose this division. And the Lions are starting to play pretty darn well right now.
Yeah, they are.
And so you need to take care of business with them. And the Vikings, their defense looking like hot garbage, but that offense is humming.
Yeah.
Because at that point is you've got to take care of business with the Bills and the Jets, because the Lions-Vikings-Lions game are going to really shape the division race. You get the Giants, who are garbage, but then you get the Rams and the Packers back to back.
Boy, that Rams team is good.
Yeah,
that Rams team is probably going to be the toughest challenge for this Bears team this season.
Absolutely,
that team is good.
And I'm looking at the schedule now, and I'm starting to agree with you. Is 8-8 seems pretty realistic. You know, you got to figure they're going to beat the Jets and the Bills. That puts you at 5-3. I say you split against the Lions. Makes you 6-4. You beat the Giants 7-4. You lose to the Rams and the Packers 7-6. And you, I think you win one of those three against the two Vikings or the Packers, and it puts you 8-8.
Right.
So yeah, it was looking like a promising start to the season, but the NFL, every week counts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not baseball where you come back the next day and you have 162 games. Every win, every loss counts. And I mean, look, we all would say that, well, we all said that we'd take 8-8. Okay, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people would say they'd take 8-8 by season's end before this season started. It would just be disappointing if they couldn't be above 500 after the way they started. But, you know, I guess at the end of the day, as long as they're 500, you could at least say that this was a step. But I can't say this enough. This last step has to be the last step. This team has to be in the playoffs by 2019. If they want this rebuild to be successful, by 2019, you have to be in the playoffs.
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100% agree. But back to this game is, offensive-wise, the offensive line looked like garbage. They weren't opening up holes. The New England Patriots, who have a mediocre at best pass rush, were getting to Mitch Trubisky regularly. And for the most part, most of the receivers weren't getting open. Tariq Cohen was neutralized, and the play calling was terrible. Your best bet would have been to those linebackers are not fleet of foot. Hightower's a good linebacker, but he is not fleet of foot. You needed to get your guys. What I would have done is kind of what the Patriots did to the Bears, is I would have done a lot of quick passes. Get Tariq Cohen into Taylor Gabriel into space with short passes. It makes Mitch Trubisky more confident and get into the rhythm, and it gives those guys space. You know, you saw when one of the linebackers from the Patriots was trying to cover Tariq Cohen in pass routes, and it was such an obvious mismatch. But the Bears weren't able to take advantage of it because every time it happened, is either Mitch overthrew a play or was running for his life. It's frustrating. The offensive line looked like garbage, and the matchups, the receivers weren't doing what they were supposed to do.
And you know, some of those missed throws by Trubisky, some were just flat missed throws, and you can't say anything else about that. But there were a few times. One in particular, it was in the first half. I can't remember exactly who he was throwing to, but like, it wasn't even close. But if you look at the replay, he was throwing that ball while being screened by three linemen. Three linemen were pretty much in his face, so he couldn't see where the hell he was throwing. Mitch Trubisky, you got to give him grief for not hitting his targets consistently. But you also got to give a lot of grief to the offensive line. They didn't do their job either. It was a collective effort.
Yeah. I mean, as far as Mitch Trubisky is, he didn't have a good game. He didn't have a terrible game either.
No.
Numbers-wise, you look, he had 300-some yards, multiple touchdowns, but... And the interception that he did get was just a flat-out awful decision by the coaching staff to put a special teamer in there as a wide receiver. I get you're frustrated with Kevin White, but you know what? Kevin White made two good catches today in the two times he was targeted. And physically, he's way better than Josh Bellamy. He's a better route runner. He's got better hands. And he's much more physical. And Josh Bellamy just gave up on that ball and got out-muscled, and there was an interception. But, you know, I'm not going to take away the interception, because there was two other ones that should have been intercepted that would have been all on Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, absolutely. There were plenty of throws that just made you cringe today. I think the ones you and I are both thinking about in the end zone, that made you cringe.
And it was such a bad decision too. Is why do you have a backup, your like third or fourth string tight end, out there with an eligible offensive tackle to that side? What kind of stupid idiot play calling was that you put that personnel group out there? Is you've already got a young quarterback who's had some red zone issues. Put your top targets in there. Don't put backup tight ends and offensive linemen out there to catch passes. That's just
I didn't get that either.
It was so mind-numbingly stupid that I'm going meatball here. It blew my mind. When I saw the bad play, I was like, what the hell was Mitch doing? But then I saw the replay of it from a different angle, and I went, who the hell do they have out there? Why the hell do they have those guys out there? This is why they need Adam Shaheen back, because that would have been an Adam Shaheen situation.
Mm-hmm.
Deion Sims is garbage, and if he's cut tomorrow, I'd say good riddance. I like Trey Burton, and I think it's safe to say that Broniker is garbage too. And we'll get to that in a minute. But Mitch Trubisky, he got much better in the second half, but he still wasn't where he needed to be. And luckily, he's fleet of foot, because if it wasn't for his legs, the Bears would have got massacred today.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, if they would have picked those passes off, just imagine what the score would have been like as well. I mean, it's both frustrating and fortunate how close that game was. It really was.
But then we get to the biggest culprit of them all for the loss. Special teams.
Cordell Patterson. What was that? 95 yards? Something like that?
I get it. He coughed one up, and that was huge. The guy doesn't cough a lot of them up. So if he does cough one up, and you take advantage of that and get points on it, you don't roll that dice again. You kick it out of the back of the end zone. Don't give him another chance, because it's like Devin Hester. If Devin Hester were to cough one up and you got points on it, don't bet on it happening again. He's more likely to run one back than he is to cough another one up. And the Bears kicked it to Cordarrelle Patterson, and he made them pay and negated the mistake he had. And then you had a punt that was muffed. You needed to recover that. You recover that there, changes the outlook of this game.
Oh, I know. I mean, they were so close to getting that.
And then the worst of them all is Ben Broniker got bowled over and blocked the punt. They blocked the punt, ran it back for a touchdown, and that just took all life out of the Bears.
Yeah, that was a gut punch. That was an absolute gut punch. I have a special teams question for you.
Okay.
And I don't know how much you agree or disagree with this, but here I go. Why was Benny Cunningham taking out kicks?
I don't know. I screamed that same question at him through my TV screen.
Why was he doing that? Why was he even back there?
I mean, I get why they have him on kick returns. He's got good hands, but if Tariq Cohen were to take it out, I go, okay, because he's shifty enough and fast enough to take one to the house. If you're not a guy that's an absolute beast, like a Herschel Walker that could carry people and to, you know, like the 35, even if they hit you, okay, I'm perfectly okay with that. If you're a guy that's fast enough to take one to the house, if somebody misses a tackle, I'm okay with you taking it out. Cunningham is neither of those guys. And I get he's got good hands and he's, you know, he's not going to fumble it. Just take it in the end zone, take a knee, start the ball or start the play with decent field position.
I mean, he's not fast. Every time he got it, he was taking it out. And he was lucky to get to, like, the line of a touchback a few times. He was lucky to. Or even close to it.
It was so infuriating. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people calling for the Bears special teams coach to be fired. And he's going to have a lot of asses he needs to kick. But it wasn't him out there that got bowled over and allowed the punt to get blocked.
Right.
It wasn't him that didn't stay in the lanes.
Right.
And prevent that kick from being returned. It wasn't him.
Right. I don't put that on him.
It wasn't his decision to run balls out of the end zone when he should have just taken a knee. But he's going to have to answer for those, and he's going to have – it's going to be how are those things corrected?
Yeah, you said it perfectly. I mean, everyone was calling for him to be fired, and I'm like, that's just poor execution on the players. Simple as that.
You know, this loss really sucks, and I'm so frustrated by it. My fear, though, is that this team is going to – the locker room starting to start to turn and they're going to start, you know, imploding. That's my fear. Those things happen with young coaches is if they can maintain this team with a positive attitude and they go out there and take care of business next week against the Jets, then I'll be a little happier, but I'm really concerned that, you know, they're going to take this loss personally and things are going to start going downhill. That's my fear.
I'm not completely worried about that yet, but, you know, I understand why you would worry about that. So I don't really have much to add.
So next week you've got a Jets team that's not that good. They've got a young quarterback that will turn the ball over. They've got to get pressure on him, though. They will have to get pressure. Otherwise, he's shown why he was picked so high in the draft. But you're definitely going to have to get pressure on him, and the offense is going to have to execute. You're going to have a better game plan going forward. And you're going to have to execute.
Hey, I said last week they've got a lot of planning to do. And, well, they've got a lot of planning to do. They're going to face a much inferior team. But you darn better be ready for that one. You would hope.
But I'm going to be at the game next week. So they better show up because I am tired of going to games where they lose. I don't want to be the jinxer of this team.
I know what it's like to be a jinx. It's not fun.
Yeah, I'm usually 50-50 with Bears games, so I don't think that's a jinx. But the games I was at that they lost were lost in terrible fashion. I was at the game when they were playing at U of I, and they were playing against Tampa. And I think Tampa won the Super Bowl that year, and it was arctic cold. and the Bears lost 9-0. And I think they only crossed midfield once. The Bears had a decent defense, and Tampa had a terrible offense. So it came down to just kicking or punting back and forth in field position battle, and 9-0.
Woof.
3 field goals in that game.
That was 0-2, wasn't it? Brutal.
And then I was at a...
Yeah.
I believe it was. And I'm trying to remember which terrible quarterback was it.
Because that was a Dick Geron year, wasn't it?
I'm trying to remember.
It had to be.
It
had to be Dick Geron because Lovey came in 04.
Bears.
I'm like 99% sure that was a Dick Geron year. Because that was the year after they had that miraculous season. They went like 13-3 and then lost to the Eagles. And then as soon as everybody cleared out of the playoff game, they started tearing the place down.
I was wrong. It was 15-0. Yeah, it was. It was just ugly. That game sucked so bad. I'm pulling up the stats here. Final stats. The Bears' leading rusher was Adrian Peterson with 42 yards.
How many first downs did they have in that game?
It was Henry Burris was the quarterback, and he threw for 78 yards.
Ew.
And four interception. His quarterback rating was 10.3. Oh. Marty Booker was the leading receiver with 25 yards, with a long of 8. Brad Maynard had 6 punts.
Yeah, it's not good.
Burris also fumbled. The Bears had 14 downs. Surprising, I don't remember that many. But you know what? It was both teams. They both got so many offensive chances because they both sucked. The Bears had 218 total yards.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, that was just an absolute awful game.
So what was the other terrible game you were at?
It was against the Texans, and it was the coldest game of the NFL season, and it was a Grossman game, and he looked like garbage, and the Texans dominated the game, and Bears fans were just so quiet because it was so cold and they were stinking. And there was a moment where they announced the temperatures around the league, and they announced the temperature in Green Bay, and then they said, you know, it wasn't as cold as in Chicago, so this was the coldest game of the NFL season, and like Green Bay was like 1 degree warmer. And the whole crowd erupted in cheers with Green Bay sucks, Green Bay sucks, Green Bay sucks. And that was the highlight of the game, is we chanted Green Bay sucks.
So what year was
because
that?
It was colder in Chicago while we were playing Houston. Oh, this was probably 2007.
So you said it was Grossman, right? Grossman was a quarterback.
To my memory,
was it at least it was at renovated Soldier Field, right?
Yes, it was.
Because the Bears Texans game, I could remember
it was
in
2008.
2008.
Yes, December 28th, 2008. Houston won 31-24.
Wait.
Oh, and it was Orton, sorry.
Was that the game where they were on the verge of winning the division and they lost?
Yeah.
Oh, you were at that game? That sucks.
Yeah, it was Orton. And he had 244 yards. Forte was the leading rusher with 50 yards. Devin Hester was the leading receiver, followed by Brandon Lloyd. Yeah, that was a terrible game. It was so utterly cold.
Well, let's hope it's not quite like that for you next week, either the game or the temperature.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, it's still an October game, and it's definitely a winnable
one. Yeah. But again, let's hope for the latter.
But I want to transition quickly, just talk about the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And even more topical is, if you're a regular listener to the show, you know our friends at the podcast, Bow, and Big Dave, who has been on the show multiple times. Big Dave now has a show on NBC Sports Chicago after the Bulls postgame called Bulls Outsider. And I saw I have the second episode DVR. It's going to be after every single game, all 82 games. And I watched the debut episode and it was really entertaining. It's Dave and two other guys who are just fans. And it's essentially a podcast on television. It's a lot of fun. It's one of the more fun half hours of television you watch.
I am so happy for Big Dave. When I saw that announcement on Instagram, I just immediately told him how happy I was for him. And I'm glad that you brought it up because I am really, really, really happy for him. And I'll ask him if he remembers us when he's famous.
Yeah, I told him, don't forget us little people.
Yeah. But that's so great for him. I'm so glad he's moving up.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves it. I mean, it was so cool. And I didn't know anything about it until like a couple of days before, the opening of the season. So it's everybody, if you have, after the Bulls game, there's the post game show, and it's immediately following that. So definitely check it out. If you don't stay up that late, DVR it, watch it the next day. That's what I did. And it was a lot of fun. And it's basically fans talking the game. It's like you talking with your buddies, except your buddies are on TV.
Yeah, that's a great gig.
I don't know what kind of expectations anybody had for the Bulls, especially with Markkanen being down. And you opened up the season against the Philadelphia 76ers, who are a very good team. And they have one of the best players, two of the best players in the NBA on their roster. And I don't know if you caught that game, but the Bulls in the first quarter and a half looked absolutely unstoppable on offense.
Yeah, I caught a bit of that game. I was watching the Hawks and the Bulls kind of back and forth, so I saw a little bit of both games. Yeah, I mean, the first half, they were making everything, and that was fun to watch. Now, keep in mind that Jabari Parker was on the bench. When he came in, he got that quick hook, but other people were doing pretty well. It was a fun first half, I'll give it that.
And then the second half just went right downhill. And you know what? It's weird. So we're getting the growing pains with Wendell Carter Jr. And I think we all knew that. I mean, it was a really tough matchup for him to go against Joel Embiid, because he's arguably one of the top five players in the league. And you know, you had some struggles there. And the second game, you didn't have a good matchup either. And you saw some good things, but definitely a lot of room for improvement for him. And I think he knows it. But you got to realize he's 19 years old. He's going to improve. And one of the things that he needed to improve on is getting rebounds. And I think that might be the easiest of all the things that he can improve on, because it's a skill he has. It's just, just being a little more physical and, putting yourself in the right position. But he's got a history of being able to do that. He's done it in college. It's just translating that to the NBA. And I think by the time we hit the quarter of the way mark, you're going to see a much improved Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah, I think that he's got a lot of promise. And I think that this is going to be one of those things where you're going to be watching what he can do, just raw talent, and you're going to like what you're going to see. There's going to be the growing pains with fundamentals and growing in the NBA and just people being older and more experienced than him. But I think if you just look at the raw ability, you see some promise there.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely do that. But Drummond and Embiid were two tough draws to start the season. But he's going to have easier matchups. And he's going to get better. And that's not even saying he was bad. It's, 4 for 6 from the field. He had 8 points against the Pistons. There's a lot of other things, other reasons why the Bulls are 0-2, and he's not one of those reasons. Against Philadelphia, against Detroit too, is the lack of defense is so astonishingly noticeable. I don't even know how to quantify it.
I don't either.
It is just so unbelievably bad. The turnovers and the defense was really noticeable against Detroit at the end of the game when they pulled out the win. But against Philadelphia, it was so bad. You just watch guys go, all the way court, one end of the court to the other, all the way without anybody even stepping in their way for easy transition points. Jabari Parker looks like he had to Google what is basketball before the game, like he had never seen a basketball before. He looked so awkward and lost out there. It's so frustrating. And I get he's upset because he's always been a starter, probably his whole life, and he's a role player now. He's coming off the bench. But he has to be able to look at this objectively and say, what does he give the Bulls as a starter? You expect him to come off the bench and be able to provide consistent scoring when the starters are off on the bench resting. And that's what Jabari Parker should do. And he's not able to do that. 5 for 13 shooting against Detroit. And I don't know what he was against Philadelphia, but it seemed like it was 0-600. It was just not good.
Yeah, no, I think you said it best. I got nothing else to add.
Campaign looks terrible out there as a point guard. I don't understand.
The tank commander? Are you disrespecting the tank commander?
He's awful, and I don't understand. I get it. So Dunn is currently out. He had a child being born. But the step down between Dunn and Campaign is so incredibly noticeable. Is you picked up Ulis, and he's not playing. And he can't be any worse than Cameron Payne. I think you need to make that transition.
Oh, I agree. Unless they're trying to tank here, Then yeah, I agree.
Holiday is, I only saw part of the Detroit game, but against Philadelphia, he was putting up so many threes, and they weren't set up like good shots. Is he was at leaning this way and leaning that way, and guys were in his face trying to block it. He had one just actually volleyball back to him. It was such a bad block. I've seen guys go to the rim and get blocked way less than that. And I'm like, why is Holiday shooting threes? And then you got crazy eye Bobby Portis, who against Philadelphia looked great. And you're like, oh man, this guy needs to get paid. And then he comes in against Detroit and looks like garbage.
Yeah, that was disappointing. I was expecting him to have a big game against Detroit,
honestly.
Expecting
a win against Detroit. I really was.
Especially in their home opener.
The Bulls got a long way to go. And I honestly thought with how weak the East is and with this roster that I felt like they would at least be in the running for that last playoff spot. And just the fact, I mean, granted, they can score a lot of points. Zach LaVine is just a scoring machine. But if they can't play any semblance of defense at all, it is going to, and I know that once Markkanen comes back, once Wendell Carter, gets a little more comfortable in there, and once Dunn is back, that they'll play somewhat better. But the fact is how bad the defense has been. I think Tom Thibodeau would have had an aneurysm watching that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, if you look at the Detroit game and you look at the game-winning point, or the game-winning bucket, I should say, oh, that was just so – it was almost like there was no effort being put there. And I hate to say it, but you look at this defense and you say, get used to it. This is what it's going to be like. But at least put a little more effort into that.
Yeah, I mean –
It was very poorly defended.
In Philadelphia is, you watch Ben Simmons play, and it looked like such ease the way he would score. And his defense it was so noticeable how much better of a defender he was than any of the Bulls guards. And you're like, damn, I wish we had that guy. I really like Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I know. I do too. It would be great to have that type of guy. Excuse me. I was kind of thinking that the other day myself. I thought, you look at that kind of guy and you say, you could see him kind of fitting on a team like this.
Oh, yeah, it would be great. But maybe we'll win the lottery and we'll get somebody great. But, we got the Mavericks coming up tomorrow. And I think that's a very winnable game. This Mavericks team.
Hopefully.
So hopefully the Bulls are able to come out and take care of business on this one.
Hopefully you can get a performance from Zach LaVine like you did against Detroit. Because if I think there was one great thing about that Detroit game, it was Zach LaVine.
I mean, he's a terrible defender, but man, that guy can, he's a legitimate scorer. Legitimate.
Yeah. That game tying three he had was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, he's been impressing me the first two games so far. They just need to come together and hopefully when Dunn comes back, it gives them some better defense, more consistent on their offense, but this team can score points. There's no doubt about that.
Well, that's the thing. The games that the Bulls are going to win this year, they're going to be 128-125 shootouts. They're not going to win any games defensively. And the fact that they can score will allow them to steal a few wins against lower teams that can still score a lot because the defense is bad. I mean, that's the way I see it. You're not going to see them win a low-scoring game.
No, those Thibodeau days of winning games 87-89 are over. These games are going to look like the All-Star game where it is all just offense. You're going to win games 164-149.
Yeah. It's going to be like a NBA 2K shootout.
Yeah, I was during that first game, it reminded me so much of like a game of NBA Jam where I was just waiting for somebody to like throw up a three-quarter court shot with the ball on fire and somebody yelling, "En fuego! He's really heating up!" But at least they're entertaining. Is if they're going to not be good, it's better to not be good and score a lot of points than to not be good and be good defensively.
Well, yeah, and at least have a team that has young, exciting guys and not be like mediocre and a bunch of old guys like a few years ago.
Agreed. But, you know, this team, I think, is going to be a much different team once Markkanen comes back from his injury.
I agree.
It's going to be, and the one interesting thing, though, is I think everybody was talking about who is going to be the alpha on this team. Whose team is this going to be? And there were arguments to be made. Lauri Markkanen is the best player on the team. It'll be him. Other people were like, well, Zach LaVine is your best scorer, and he's your guy you just paid a big contract to. It's going to be him. And I wonder now with Markkanen being out the first like 6 weeks of the season, is that going to change the dynamic of this team? Because Zach is going to be carrying that load for the first like 2 months.
To me, it's still Markkanen's team, but yeah, we're going to kind of see how it develops over the next 2 months or so. Really just kind of see how it develops over the year, because there's going to be a lot of growing for a number of these guys, and the dynamic may shift regardless of who's out, but how they play. So yeah, to me right now, it is Lauri Markkanen's team, but you know, when the year is done, we'll see if anything changes.
But I want to wrap this up talking about Blackhawks. This team is hot garbage. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement?
This team's defense is hot garbage. I think they have a lot of talent still. I think that Kane, Toews, DeBrincat look great. I think Corey Crawford coming back, his two games, he's looked great. But this defense is wretched. Wretched.
Yeah, it is atrocious. The number of shots that on goal, the number of chances, good scoring opportunities that they give up, it's so bad. It is completely awful. And if Corey Crawford wasn't absolutely one of the best goalies in hockey, you don't win that game. Was it yesterday?
Against the Blue Jackets?
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, that was a Saturday. He looked like himself.
And it was absolutely, without a doubt, a goalie win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they made some nice plays offensively. DeBrincat had a nice shot, and Kane scored a beautiful goal after some nice passing. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the defense was done by the goalie.
And tonight was a campaign game.
You mean Cam Ward?
Yeah, same guy.
I got to tweet that. That's hilarious.
And you didn't have Corey Crawford there to stand on his head. And you get the ice mopped up by Tampa Bay 6-3.
Oh, just pure ugly. And you know what? You can't put anything on Cam Ward because he made some ridiculously good saves tonight. If it wasn't for him, they'd probably lose like 8-2.
This team, I don't know. Like, if this team makes the playoffs, then Corey Crawford should just have a plaque put in the Hockey Hall of Fame right then and there. Because it'll be on the back of his greatness.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the saves he made against the Blue Jackets. It's a common theme for this team to just give up these odd man breaks, and the way that just opposing skaters zoom by the defense. It's like watching the Mark Trestman Bears defense just give up long plays and losing games like that. They can't keep up with these guys, and the turnovers are just terrible. The turnover by Chris Kunitz against the Arizona Coyotes, it was awful.
Yeah, the turnovers this whole season have just been so obnoxiously bad. I have not witnessed this bad of turning over in not in the Quenneville era.
Yeah, it's getting progressively worse year after year.
I've read some people saying that the Blackhawks need to take this cap room they have and use it to their advantage sooner rather than later. But who are you going to get that's going to improve this team mid-season?
Stan Bowman needed to do something this offseason, whether it's a trade or something like that, because right now there really isn't many options.
There's no options. And even like, what one player is going to change the dynamic of this team?
Oh, nothing at this point. Nothing at this point. I mean, Joki Haru looks like a promising young kid, but he's still young, but he looks promising. We all know the issues with Keith and Seabrook. You know, they're old and they just physically aren't as good anymore. Jan Ruda is just not working out. He's not panning out. Brandon Manning has been a disaster so far.
Has he ever played hockey before he joined the Blackhawks?
Yeah, it's not looked good for him at all.
It has been no good. And the thing with Joki Haru is I was shocked that he made this team. I mean, I know he's the future of the defenseman and he's going to be, you know, the expectation is he's going to be good and he's shown flashes. But I thought it was probably a year too soon for him. So when he made the squad, I was excited but nervous because I was like, if this is who's making it, is it because he's impressed so much, or is it because all the other options are terrible?
Might be a little of both, honestly. I mean, I think he's talented enough to play, but who else were you going to get that was better?
And the sad thing is I don't know how you fix this defense until you can get rid of Keith and Seabrook.
Yeah, it's not a good situation at all because you're pretty much stuck with that for a while.
They gave up 33 shots in one period tonight, tying.
Yeah, that was the second period, right?
Record. This franchise has been around a long time. Yeesh. And they gave up 33 shots in one period. One period.
Yeah, that's... They couldn't clear their zone. They were turning the puck over. And Tampa Bay was just skating so much faster than they were. And, you know, both teams were coming off games the night before, so it's not like Tampa Bay was rested and the Blackhawks weren't. They both had to play games in other areas the night before.
And I swear, I bet Kane just grits his teeth and is so annoyed that he has to play over 14. I don't think he's a real NHL player.
At 14, I don't know. I'm not giving up on him yet. I think there's some potential there, but you know that Kane would love to be playing with certain other people, some that may not be here right now. Hint, hint, you know who I'm talking about. Speaking of which, what bit Brandon Saad when he left the Blackhawks the first time? What snake bit him? What curse came upon him? Because Brandon Saad has looked so mediocre since he's come back to the Hawks. But to some of his credit, he's just not finding the back of the net where the puck is just missing going in, or the goalie makes a great save, or it hits the post. But he is just snake bit. I mean, this is not the guy you saw the first go-around with the Hawks. Because if you remember, in the 2015 playoffs, that guy was clutch that year.
My favorite quote about Brandon Saad was from a couple nights ago. They asked Quenneville, "What are you looking for from Saad?" And he just went, "More." I don't know what else to say. I don't even know how to quantify it. I don't know how to describe what's wrong with Brandon Saad. I can't explain it. So that one word answer just kind of goes, yeah, at least I'm not the only one in this boat.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone can legit solve what's up with this guy. He was a fan favorite here before he was traded the first time. You know, now people are ready to see him benched, essentially, put in the press box. And I think if you want to write Brandon Saad, you have to keep playing him. But it's so frustrating at this point.
I'm just laughing. I'm trying to recall that one of my favorite tweets this season about the Blackhawks was, it's almost as if someone was around the Blackhawks office commented, "Well, our defense can't be much worse next year." And Stan Bowman said, "Hold my coconut water."
I look at this off season, and I think Cam Ward and Chris Kunitz, you couldn't have done more than that. I guess I don't understand. I think this Blackhawks team is a team where you can have fun watching them because Taze looks great. Kane looks like Kane. And DeBrincat, that kid's the real deal. That kid is talented. And they've won more than they've lost. But imagine where they would be without Taze, Kane, or DeBrincat. Imagine where they'd be. This is not a team that looks like they're going to make a deep playoff run. But it looks like a team that can at least squeak out some wins because it has enough talent to it. Does that make sense?
It's all going to be dependent on Corey Crawford's health. If he can stay healthy, I agree with you. If we're stuck with Cam Ward, a.k.a. Campaign, if we're stuck with him the majority of games, then this season's going to get real ugly real quick.
Well, yes. I mean, it was suggesting that Corey Crawford is going to continue to play. And, I mean, the nice thing is, you watch Corey Crawford in his first two games, he looked like himself. It looked like he really didn't miss much time, even though he nearly missed a year. So there's at least some good news there. But you look at the game against the Coyotes, and I mean, there were some shots that he didn't have a chance in stopping, and that was all on the defense. He can do a lot but he cannot do it all.
That game was so infuriatingly frustrating because the Coyotes are a terrible team, and they dominated the Blackhawks.
And you got beat by a bunch of former Hawks and Vinny Hinostroza and Antti Raanta and, you know, teardrop Nicholas Hjalmarsson. Who I really wish we still had.
Yeah, well, I mean, compared to Seabrook and Keith, yeah, but he's not the same Hjalmarsson.
He's better than what we have for the most
part. That's just not saying much. Is I think you could put a bag of concrete mixed with a jersey on there and it would be comparable.
No, you put one of those mannequins that they had out there.
I just feel like if somebody, if you put like, you know, Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's and just dropped his corpse there with a stick on the ice, that he's going to at least block a couple shots.
You know who would be a great defenseman for the Hawks, though? John Leckie.
Well, I mean, to be fair, is, you know, Buttercup could really take up some space there on the ice.
You know what I could just see? Someone tries a slap shot, and then the puck just gets lodged in one of his spurs.
you know, he dives to save a puck, you know, from going in the net, can't reach it, and he's like, just spits out this giant wad of chaw and deflects the puck. The ice girl's got to come out and clean it up.
They're constantly cleaning up his chaw from the ice.
The ice, all the logos and the sponsorships are tainted with chaw.
Imagine if he got into a hockey fight. That would be something.
Well, he's got the hair for hockey already.
Yeah, he does. And he could grow a playoff beard.
That he can. He can grow a playoff beard.
Yeah, I see. I think he'd be a great Hawks defenseman.
I'm willing to give him a chance.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, he probably wouldn't be the oldest guy on the ice.
It's true. Because Chris Kunitz is technically older than him, I think.
I just want to take a quick backtrack. Is the Bears head coach is younger than Tom Brady.
Seriously?
Matt Nagy is younger than Tom Brady.
That's nuts.
Tom Brady is younger than four NFL head coaches.
That is just nuts.
Mitch Trubisky. Tom Brady was a senior in high school when Mitch Trubisky was born.
That's crazy.
Numbers. But
gotta love
Blackhawks. Blackhawks, yeah. I don't even know what to do. This season, I have no expectations. I'm just going to go and sit down, watch the games, and try to watch the games like prior to the 2010. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys can remember the games prior to 2010. Maybe even 2009, when it was a lot of dark ages for Blackhawks fans. I'm going to try to watch the games like I did back then, when you're just like, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch a hockey game. I have no expectations. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, there you go. That's kind of how I'm doing it. You enjoy every win and you shrug at every loss.
Yeah. I mean, if the dark side of the Quenneville era and the Taves era and the Kane era with the Blackhawks is I've had a lot of expectations and it's given me a lot of heart problems watching these games because you expect to win. And, you know, they've been in so many big games that your anxiety just gets high trying to watch some of them. And your emotions are up and down. And I need a break from that. And it sucks to have it happen in such a terrible fashion, but I'm going to just try to relax and watch games like a normal human being.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'm trying to approach it.
I don't really, like, regular people that are listening to this, probably don't have any regular listeners. I imagine everybody's kind of like us, but anybody that just can sit there and casually watch sports, like, please send me tips. I don't know.
Seriously.
How to do it.
No, me too. Like, I'm not kidding.
I'm a big Michigan football fan, and I remember when they lost, I believe it was the Rose Bowl. It was to Texas with Vince Young at quarterback, and it was just like basically a back and forth shootout game, and they lost the last second, and I was just devastated. I didn't talk to anybody for like 3 days, and like my dog was scared to go in the room with me because I was yelling, and I was like, human beings shouldn't act like this. Like,
you should have seen me the night of game
Bears
seven.
Game get me so frustrated. Like, I should have like a blood pressure cuff and just test my blood pressure around the third quarter. And it's probably like, you know, 200 over 140. You know, I'm probably having a heart attack. It's not normal.
No, I feel ya. You should have seen me during game seven of the World Series.
I lose you?
What's that?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I mean, human beings are not meant to watch sports like that. And, you know, I need to not have heart attacks in the middle of games or stress myself out so much. But I think that's the life of being a Chicago sports fan.
Yeah, that's very true. I feel the same way. I wish I could be a very casual watcher without so much emotion. But every time I try to say I'm going to watch it with no emotion, well, I always watch with emotion. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it's funny. My dad used to be just the most angry Bears fan ever. Like, in my life, I watched him take off his shoe once that he was wearing and throw it through the TV. He broke our kitchen table once, like, by pounding his hand on it because they lost to the 49ers. And
was that in recent years or a while ago?
No, this was Joe Montana era still.
Oh, okay.
And then he just got old. And then he just sat there and watched the game, and I don't think he paid attention as much. And, you know, if he switched channels at a commercial and was watching something else, he might get stuck in that for a half an hour and then switch back and then not miss a beat. And I was like, and then I would get mad at him. Like, how are you watching a game like this? You're missing the blah, blah, and going full meatball on my dad. And like, sometimes I could just sit there. I wish I could watch a game like that where, like, if I miss a play or they do something bonehead, it doesn't ruin the rest of my day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at how many Sundays that the Bears have ruined for both of us. I mean, I get sour on Sundays when they lose stupid games like this. And it's been that way for a while. And the Bears do this a lot. So a lot of Sundays have been soured.
So anybody out there that has, like, I don't know, some sort of professional background in dealing with sports crazy people, definitely reach out to us.
Please.
And if you're somebody that can sit down and casually watch a Chicago sports game, please reach out to us and let us know how you do it or walk us through the experience, because I don't even understand what it's like.
I don't either. I don't either.
Like, my wife likes sports, but she won't watch a Bears or Hawks game with me because she knows I act like a crazy person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mom's the same way with me. Not going to lie.
Like, she's from Philadelphia, so she's like a Philadelphia fan. But like, if she's watching like a Flyers or Eagles game or something, then she'll sit and watch with me because then I can be rational because it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
No vested interest. But then the minute it's one of my teams, I'm just like,
yep. Yep. I'm right there with you. What's the maddest you've ever gotten? What moment were you ever the maddest that you did something crazy?
Um, during a Bears just game or a Chicago
any
sports
Chicago
game?
Sports game.
It had to have been when the Bartman play happened.
Ah, interesting.
And I go back now, and I rationally can say I don't blame Bartman. Bartman didn't lose the game, but in the moment, I absolutely lost my mind. And
you were not the only one.
I flipped my couch. I flipped my couch over. I stormed out of my house, and I just started screaming at the top of my lungs. And I lived in Philadelphia, so nobody else even cared. They were like, whatever. Who's this weirdo? It's like nobody understood why I was upset. Like, if, at least in Chicago, everyone would be like, I get it. I understand. I know what just happened. But I was the absolute lunatic, crazy
now,
person.
That was, and, that was after they scored all the runs, or was that after just the play?
That it was after the
okay,
inning.
Yeah, okay.
It's, and all of it was vented at poor Bartman, and who didn't deserve any of it. You know, he didn't boot the ball at short.
No, he didn't lay a flat curve ball to Pudge Rodriguez 0-2.
What was your maddest?
Well, I got a few. It was a game we won. It was game 7 of the World Series. It was when Baez bunted foul with Hayward at third and one out in the 9th inning. I just yelled as many obscenities as you would imagine. And I slammed my fist into the wall several times. Because it was that moment, not the Rajay Davis moment, it was that moment where I thought that they were losing it. And then the same thing happened the next batter when Dexter Fowler grounded a pitch up the middle that looked like off the bat it was going to get through, and then Lindor made the play. At that moment, I thought it was all over, the Cubs lost. Because when the Rajay Davis thing happened, I kind of yelled, "What?" And then I just went silent. Like, my head just dropped, and I didn't say a word for like the next 15 minutes. So it was either that, or I think it was a Bears game. I'm trying to remember what Bears game it was. It wasn't the Super Bowl. I remember getting pretty mad during the NFC Championship, and then I just gave up on that game. So I don't think it was that. It was some Bears game, but I just remember I was really, really mad.
Also the game, the Bears game where they played the Cardinals on was it Sunday night or Monday Night Football? It was the Bears are who we thought they were game. And
yeah,
I went to bed at halftime because I lived in Philadelphia and all my friends there were Eagles fans, and because the Bears were playing like they were so good that year and they started playing like crap, they were all just, sending me messages and things like making fun of me. And I just absolutely lost my mind. And I was like, that's it. F this. I'm going to bed. And I went to bed. I didn't see any of the second half. I woke up in the morning and I'm like, how bad did the Bears get killed? I looked at the score and I was like, They won? Missed it all because I was so angry.
Oh, I have another one. I just remembered this. It was the 2014 NHL playoffs. It was the Blues and the Blackhawks in round one. It was game two. And it was, I'm sure you remember this game. It was the game where the Hawks were like 7 seconds away from taking game two and the Blues tied it on a long slap shot. Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
I remember yelling so loud, then taking a bottle of shampoo that I had on my dresser because I just bought it from Walmart, and I just flung it at the wall and it exploded.
I thought of another one too. It was one where you were mad too, but it was at a different moment. Is during game 7 of the World Series when the Cubs were up, my dad just goes, eh, the Cubs got this one. And I lost my mind. I was like, you're going to jinx this game. Just take it back. Take it. And I lost it on my dad. And he's like, and he just kept like doubling down gun. No, this game's over. They won. And when the Indians came back, I just was like, my dad jinxed this game and is going to cost the Cubs a World Series.
Oh, that's another thing that I want people to help me with. Tell me there's no jinx, because it's so stupid. But believe me, if I was with somebody the night of Game 7 and they were saying the Cubs are definitely going to win this, I'm shaking them and telling them to shut up.
I blame myself partly for the loss to the last 2 weeks for the Bears, because I wore a different outfit than I did the first several games.
Yeah, there you go. Superstitions right there, man. I'm
like, how irrational is that?
It's stupid, and it sounds so stupid, but it's, you're also like, you know, you can either say it's stupid and know it's stupid or not take any chances. I might as well not take any chances, right?
That's what I'm saying is, sure, to a rational person, the fact that I didn't wear like my Bears basketball shorts and my Devin Hester orange jersey, like if I didn't wear that, it doesn't change the Bears don't know what I'm wearing. They don't know who I am. They're going to play the same right. exact way. And I get that from a rational standpoint. But I'm also going to wear that outfit next week, because underneath everything when I go to the game, because otherwise it'll be my fault if they lose to the Jets.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's so stupid, and it makes no sense.
The meatball portion of my brain goes, well, clearly the reason that teams win or lose isn't the quality of their play or some other factors that are directly influenced by adults playing this game. It is whose fans are more rigorous in
exactly,
their following
right?
of traditions.
It's crazy, but the meatballery can trump your thinking, and it's not good.
It's so crazy.
It is.
I mean, I get like the hockey playoff beard. That's like a fun one. That we all do.
It's just more of a yeah, that's just a one. Thing, you know. It's not as much superstition. It's just a thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's not. It's beyond superstition at this point. It's just a thing. It's just you do it. It's kind of like
right
Movember, and you grow the mustache. But like when I have to sit on the couch a certain way, or drink a certain beverage, or not drink anything during certain periods or quarters, and have to wear a certain clothing. Like that goes to the something wrong
yeah.
with me.
Exactly.
And I thought of another game where I didn't have an anger outburst. It was the game against the Kings for the Blackhawks, where they lost in overtime for the opportunity to go to the Stanley Cup against the Rangers. And when the Kings scored and won that game, I wasn't angry. I wasn't upset.
Same.
I was just numb. I just sat there and I stared at the TV for probably an hour. I don't know what happened. It was like a lost hour of my life. And I just sort of stared at it like, was that a dream? What happened?
No, I know.
There?
Yeah. I didn't yell and swear when they scored. I stood there. I was with some friends. We all just kind of put our heads down, then raised it back up. You saw LA celebrating on the ice. And then my mind was trying to tell me this wasn't real. Because no, the Blackhawks are supposed to win this game. They were supposed to win this game and go to the Cup Finals. They weren't supposed to lose after being down 3-1. That wasn't supposed to happen. But I got more mad about it as time went on. But in the moment, I was just in such shock that I didn't get time to be mad. And, you know, that was the same scenario for me when the Bears lost in week 17, when they were one stop away against Green Bay in 2013. The same thing happened.
That's how I was in the Bears Super Bowl against the Colts. Is I was on cloud nine after the opening kick. And then after that, it was just, I just kind of sat there numb. And I lived in Philadelphia, so I was the only Bears fan. So sitting in my house by myself with on the couch and in my jersey watching this game. And it was, I was just numb. I was like, I don't know how to explain this.
Honestly, I could remember the opening kick and the very end of the game. The rest of the game to me at this point, like I pretty much just blurred it out of my memory. It's just such a blur to me.
Every time I think of that game, I can only think of one of the Colts defenders said that they knew exactly what plays the Bears were going to run before they ran them.
Yeah.
And that's all I can think of when I think of that game.
Yeah. To me, that was sad, but I think the Bears lost that upsets me most, not because like, I mean, they never had a lead and they were never winning that game with Cutler going down really, but I was more upset when they lost the NFC Championship against the Packers because of who was against and because they were at home. And even though that 06 team defensively was better than the 2010 team, I really thought that if they could beat the Packers, they could have won the Super Bowl. I didn't think that Steelers team was that great. So I remember being more angry during the NFC Championship game while just sad during the Super Bowl.
Agreed. But I don't know if you have anything else you wanted to add.
No, I think I'm good.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody for listening. Check us out on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Thank you so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or the TuneIn app. And your job is to share this podcast with at least one friend. That's how you grow. So thanks so much for listening. Check us out next week. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.